Semi-crazy, I think that's less than most. My delusions aren't quite up to snuff. I see the news, a rag soiled with lies. It only gets love when somebody's died. See the cars zip past the crosswalks. Watch you hurry, a wander to the sky. Boring job, one that's gonna kill ya. Turn on, tune in, drop out.
Welcome, one and all, to Professor Metal's Irate Debate and Calamitous Commentary with the Philosophical Chain Gang. Today's episode, Identity and the 401k, hashtag YOLO. I'm your host, Professor Metal.
I'm Sean.
I'm River.
I'm Bruce.
And so we finally got a call.
Really?
Our call-in has finally received a message, so
all right.
Let's go to that and see what we've got.
I finally breached the time-space continuum. This is Bruce. I've got a few seconds and we can only do this once, so pay attention. I need you to watch your cholesterol, get a moderate amount of exercise, and try again to quit smoking. They're coming for me. I've got to go.
Oh, hell no.
Well, that was interesting.
Yeah, what just happened? Did you just get life advice from your future self, Bruce?
I'm chalking this one up to shenanigans.
So, what? Okay. Well, thrown off here, but didn't you just give yourself life advice?
Well, some version of me from the future is telling me to do something that would benefit him. Is that exactly the same thing as giving me advice, or is he trying to get me to do something that would be good for him?
But aren't you and me and... No, wait, no. Aren't you and him the same you?
I know this is a little bit complicated. Bruce, you will have or are going to break into that room I keep telling you all to stay out of.
I would never...
Oh, that's what's in the room.
Ah, good to know.
No, that's what will be in the room.
Oh, crap.
And okay. Probably not good to know at all.
So, the you from the future is not the you from now.
Well, clearly he wants me to do a bunch of stuff that I don't want to do. So, if we're of two opinions on it, how could we be the same person?
Self-conflict is a constantly running internal monologue that I think all people have.
No, it's not.
No, it's
yes,
just
it
you.
Is. No, it's not.
No, it's pretty much just you.
Oh. Never mind then.
Okay, so in order to wrap our heads around this, the you from the future is different because he has a different opinion, or he has a different opinion because he's a different person?
Well, I'm just saying that the fact that we have different opinions is evidence that we're not necessarily the same person. Maybe there are different levels of identity. And we, in one sense, we could say we're the same person in that we're different points on this thread of a timeline. On the other hand, we're different points.
Well, but shouldn't you want what he wants because you will eventually be him?
Well, I will want what he wants when I'm him, but I clearly don't want that now.
Okay. All right. But why wouldn't you...
Besides, I know the guy. He's probably kind of a jerk.
But you're banking, right? It's like saving, right? You're not exactly losing the money. You're just keeping it for a later date. You're going to do something with it at a time in the future. So it's not the same as having, I don't know, lost $500, is it?
I don't know. I guess the question really is, do we owe ourselves anything? Should we live for the now or should we live for later? I definitely think that's a big question that's being asked today on the whole, especially given modern circumstances and what's been going on in society.
Well, let's unpack it in those terms then.
It seems like, in some sense, you've only lost the opportunity to have done something now, right? You're not losing the opportunity to have done something in the future, but you are losing the ability to have done it in the present. So, since the present is an ever-changing moment, if we take seriously the notion that the person in the future is different from the person now, then isn't the person now always slipping away into someone who we aren't anymore?
It is possible. Well, I guess there has to be kind of a balance. Two people who at least do this well. I mean, we haven't necessarily established that saving up or doing things for our future selves is the best idea. But we have seen cases of people who don't do it at all, and their life sort of goes off the rails at some point. People who do it too much, and they're always chasing something that's ahead of them, and they never stop to enjoy life. Clearly, if there is a way to do it, it is somewhere in the middle between those two extremes. This also gets into a basic, I'd almost call it pre-ethical, because it isn't so much about right or wrong or morality, but it is one of the things that it's founded on, which is self-control. And there are a lot of game theory tests that people have done. For example, when you take a child and you tell them, I'll give you one piece of candy now, or if you can sit still for a couple of minutes, I'll give you two pieces of candy. You're asking them to do the same thing, to put up with, oh, I'm not getting any candy now, in order to get a greater benefit later.
But that's, I think, part of the problem, is especially when you expand that out, the future's no real guarantee. I mean, there's no guarantee that if you put money away now, that that money will be worth anything in even 10 years, much less 40, 50 years. So why would we live in uncertain times, as it were? Well, at least a lot of people feel that way.
Well, this is Dennis Leary's classic argument about the guy who goes jogging every day and drops dead at 50 of a heart attack in the park and gets found by a couple of smokers wandering around meandering, right? Like, this is the idea that if the future is not set, then I am essentially putting my faith and trust in future events coming to fruition in a way that is valuable to me. While I could at any moment die of some terrible random meteor strike or car crash or whatever else, and thus those investments in some sense would not come to fruition.
All reward calculations are to some extent also risk calculations. However, I think we can also come up with plenty of examples of people who really do live for the moment and just blow money as soon as it gets in their hands and just pretty much follow every urge they have at the moment they have it without any kind of self-restraint. And there are lots of poor examples there too.
So, kind of getting back to the are you the same you sort of thing, there is actually a basis in biology for that to be false because of the way humans generate new cells and tissue over time. I think the common understanding is basically there's a quote-unquote new you every 7 years. There's, because of your body has effectively replaced itself over the course of 7 years. Your liver's generated new cells and your all of your muscles and skin and everything. It's effectively the same DNA pattern, but different cells, as it were, different parts.
There's a classical thought experiment regarding exactly this, is getting to the problem of identity, with the Argos, the ship of Jason and the Argonauts, a famous Greek ship. They're sailing it around, and from time to time, pieces need to be replaced, and they replace them out, and they do so until there are none of the original pieces left. Is it the same Argos, is the first question. The second question is, what if a collector has been taking all the original pieces, and they put together a new ship, a rickety, jankety-ass old version, but the original pieces of the ship in the same original configuration, is that the Argos, or is the one that has none of the original pieces in it, but has been in continuous operation, the Argos? What's more important, that continuous wavefront that moves forward, or what it's made from? It's something to think about. I think about identity a little bit differently. I think that I am me in the here and now is absolutely certain. If I doubt that, then I can't rest anything, because everything is epistemically built upon that. The idea that I have had a past and that I will have a future, that thread that runs forward and backward, those are extremely high probability theories. It is not impossible that the universe didn't instantiate itself 5 minutes ago. It's so unlikely as to be not worth considering, except in relation to these kinds of discussions. But the fact that it's not impossible means that my future and past existence aren't certain in the way that my existence in the here and now is. So there's a slight difference.
Okay, I think I see what you're saying. And there's a certain kind of sense to that. I mean, on some level, I don't think of myself as having been diminished by the shedding of a few skin cells after taking a bath. But at the same time, if you were to cut off my arm and ask me, is that my arm? Well, it's no longer attached to my body. It's no longer a part of my living self. I would still identify that as my arm, as a part of my body, even though it's no longer hooked into the system.
How long do you think it would take to test that theory? Steve? Thank you.
Arm!
Under most human rights law, I think you get to keep the arm.
Well, and that's probably for the best, because I have a feeling that I'm going to need it in the very near future. But it's still mine. It's still a part of me, even though it is now separated.
Yeah, you can take it home in a bag.
So, but that's different from a part of me, right? Because I don't take parts of me home in a bag. They come along as associated with the me-ness.
Right.
As a matter of fact, moreover than that, I would actually have trouble recognizing a version of me that now is less an arm as me if I were looking at it than I would if I were in the position of having the arm. I mean, imagine yourself, right? But in a very evil genius sort of twist, one of your eyes has been removed and you're now wearing an eye patch. But this is a you version from very similar time scale, like 15 minutes in the future. Would you recognize that you as being you, or would there be a jarring difference from the you you recognize?
I guess it would be up to what I would calculate the likelihood of me losing an eye within the next 15 minutes, which is probably higher than average.
That's fair. My arm!
Oh, please, we'll put it back on later. Quit whining.
Identity is complicated, and especially when you get into, for example, parts being transplanted into other people. Think of the musical Repo Man, for an example. If when you disassociate ownership from body parts, it's sort of a ridiculous scenario, but it does touch on that. What is you? What is yours?
I think that's actually a very good point. As a matter of fact, I have heard the phrase and been frustrated by the phrase on many occasions from people talking about transplanting organs. You have so-and-so's heart, right? Well, it seems like to me, if it's sewn up inside my body and healing has occurred to such an extent that that is now interconnected and functional within my body, it's no longer so-and-so's heart. It's now my heart. It's now that person's body part that is connected with their tissues and been a part of their living essence in some way.
So, bodily autonomy aside, I think we kind of need to get back to our core concept here. Do we owe ourselves something? Should we feel like we need to do something for ourselves going forward, or do we feel like we need to do something for ourselves at a later time? Should we save that extra few dollars, or should we just spend it on something that looks nice?
Marketers have long called saving consumerism needlessly delayed. The concept that we are in some way putting something away for the future is, of course, risky on some level. But what really bothers me with this question is not so much the idea that there might be a different self than the self I am now in the future. What bothers me is when that line can be drawn, right? Because I'm always a slightly different person every now that passes. So at what point does the person that I am now, in some sense, become different from the person I will be?
That's fair. I think that different people kind of view that differently. I think it's much more subjective sort of thing. For some folks, it's when an opinion about something has significantly changed, or when you'd known more than formerly. It kind of depends on person on it.
What if the past me had made better decisions such that my life right now were in a much better place? I'd certainly enjoy that. And maybe if I take the time to, like, set that up and develop those habits, then I can, you know, enjoy those going forward. Not just at any one point, but sort of continuously improve my life and keep improving it and making it better. And it's, yeah, and the question is, at some point, and I, now is it the me, at this instant, there is an I who will enjoy the benefits of that. In the same way that that me who's here now would have enjoyed the benefits of if the past me had made better decisions.
Well, I think that's coming from the benefit of hindsight. I'm sure we can all look back and say, well, if I had done this better, if I had studied more in school, or if I had worked out more, or what have you, then my life in some way would be objectively better. And we don't know that because it didn't happen, therefore it is an unknowable thing.
Well, again, to reach back a little bit further, the idea to me that I am bothered by is, would I tell 7-year-old me that he needs to start a strict regimen of high-protein, low-carb dieting so that I can now be skinny and feel good about my body, whereas I might be happy to tell me from 2 weeks ago not to eat that piece of cake because we're going to feel fat because of it. It seems like there's a much different me from many years ago than there is a me from not that long ago.
Yeah, yeah.
And if that applies going forward, there's a me who is very like the me today who will be the me in 2 weeks, and there's a very different me who will be the me in 20 years, if there will be a me in 20 years.
Okay, here's another thing that I inherit from the me from the past, is not just the circumstances of my life, but also the memories that I've had. If I go back to the 7-year-old me and say, you know, you need to buckle down and do the work to get really good grades so that you get your GPA up to this high enough, and that's going to get you into this college and get it paid for. Okay, so now I've cost. So now let's teleport back to my time. Now I've cost myself much of my childhood. Now there's a downside to upside trade-off here.
So in some sense, what we're getting to talking about is the notion of regret. That seems to be very deeply interlocked with this concept of whether or not we would want something different from a past or future self, right? If I regret decisions that I've made in the past, then I might want to make changes to those decisions. If, on the other hand, I do not regret decisions, some other set of decisions, I would probably not ask for those to be changed going back. On the other hand, a lot of the moments that I thought I really wanted at the time were the ones that turned out to be the ones I regretted later. So if I know that there are a certain set of decisions that have in my past been things I regret, then shouldn't my goal be to not have regrets, to want to change anyway?
But then you still have to suffer the circumstances that made you regret it.
Right, but maybe I could just not regret those circumstances. Isn't that what YOLO's all about?
I don't know. I think it's the Buddhist shortcut. It's just redefine what makes you happy and everything's fine.
Well, but I don't feel that there's necessarily anything wrong with that. It's, if you have the means to change something about your past self, would you do it understanding that you would fundamentally alter yourself of now? You would potentially radically change everything you are.
Let me just go ahead and throw this out here. Fundamentally altering the person that you will have are being is not necessarily all bad.
That's true. I can think of some improvements I could put on myself.
But it'd be bad for me. I mean, me wouldn't be here unless all my flaws were here, too.
So we're not just comparing ourselves to the future and past self, but to alternate selves now.
Right, that's a fair point. We're making the lateral move, if you will.
All right.
Certainly. But, I mean, I think that's at least until we can kind of break that time barrier or find a means to temporally, fundamentally alter ourselves.
Which I have well done, apparently.
Fair. We have to, I think, learn to live with ourselves, as it were. Learn to accept our faults, what we've done wrong. And while there is the issue of regret, I feel that it is better for myself, at least for the self, to reconcile that, to move beyond it.
I think it's the same question of striving in the here and now for the future moment. Again, get back with identity. The me in the here and now, in this version, on any potential alternate timeline, is the basis of everything else that I think might exist. One of the next two, in order to bridge the problem of induction, I have to believe in past and future. I have to have some expectation that there is a future, and I have to have some memory of the past in order to make a rational choice about my behavior to bring that expectation about. Thus I can have will, thus I can make choice at all. So past, present, and future are required to be assumed. The past and future are based on the present, but to choose at all is based on the belief in all three.
So are we talking about, as opposed to like Russell's 5-minute universe hypothesis, which you brought up a little bit earlier?
Yeah.
I definitely think for purposes of this conversation, we need to assume that the past is something that happened and the future is something that will happen.
But what's so important, it seems like to me, about the YOLO end of this, right? The sense that there is some attitude of don't do things for the future, do things for the now, is in so much as we are unsure of the future. It is the sense that we cannot assume a future and also feel that we have lived to the greatest possible extent in the time we were here. Because inevitably there will be a future that doesn't happen, right? Whether it happens tomorrow because I get run over by a car, whether it happens when I'm 95 because my oxygen filter gives out on my fancy electric lung or whatever else, there will be a moment at which I was here and then am not, even though I conceive of me in that future.
And then everything that you've saved up, whether it be an opportunity to do something or some form of wealth, is then void.
I think this is something that humans have struggled with, not just recently, but for a very, very long time. Frost is a very good example of the road less taken.
And it's not an entirely binary choice, I have to realize. There's an entire range of behaviors towards saving up opportunities for the future and expending all of our opportunities right now, in between which we navigate to some degree. So that live for the now thing might be the message that some people need to hear when they aren't enjoying their life too much because they're working too hard to bank for the future and are at risk of never actually cashing in their opportunities. Straighten your shit up might be a good message to hear for people who are constantly spending all of their opportunities and not saving or increasing their, not just material, but wealth of event, of situation.
Experiential wealth.
Yeah.
So I think that at this point we kind of need to touch on that music video that The Lonely Island did about YOLO and the switch stance that the video takes. For those of you who haven't seen it, it starts off with the premise that YOLO is this rallying cry for a generation and this sense of adventure, and very quickly changes gears to you only live once, meaning be careful about it then. Don't take unnecessary risks. And by the end of the video, YOLO has come to be stated as you ought to look out.
And they're very, very risk averse, hiding in their house, trying to avoid all possible risk. The exact opposite of what it's originally taken to mean.
But what's interesting about that is that even within the mini world constructed by the video, both ends of the spectrum are represented as being very poor choices, right? Going too far into living without regret, doing whatever you feel like at the time, is represented very poorly at the beginning. And by the end of it, it's lock yourself in the house, burn off your fingerprints, don't get anywhere near a window. Both ends of this are represented as being very negative experiences of the world.
I feel at this point it's kind of fair to point out that both traditional Buddhism and Hegel have something to say about this, that maybe one or the other extreme isn't the best option, but rather that the best option lies somewhere in the middle.
Epicurus is going to throw down in his too. Moderation in all
things. I have always liked the phrase moderation in all things, especially moderation. I feel like that grabs you on some level.
Yeah, you can have too much moderation. It's Leaves you with a horrible moderation hangover.
Well, it's only moderately bad, let's be fair.
It's true. I definitely agree with that on a personal level. I think there are times in which you kind of have to go, well, I want to drink and I want to party, but also I have to be at work tomorrow, or I want to drink and I want to party and I have no commitments the next day. You know, sometimes you do have to throw caution to the wind and kind of live in the now. Personally, I feel that not doing so wastes an opportunity. And with the way the climate of society is going, I feel those opportunities are fewer and fewer going forward.
I think this entire process, I mean, there's no one answer to it, but the constant thing of managing the risk versus reward versus opportunity versus value in the now versus banked value is what's very commonly referred to as work-life balance.
Sure, and while we're playing the game of relating this to the vernacular of the modern times, I think we need to talk about what it is that we're trying to avoid in that sense. And that's been termed FOMO, or fear of missing out, right? That, to some degree, is the driving force behind trying to live in this other kind of way. So whatever balance we strike inevitably has to be one in which we are personally satisfied that we are not trying to live so far outside of ourselves that we can't hold it together to have the things we want, and at the same time has to satisfy and sate that fear that we missed out on something we would have wanted to be a part of.
This would touch on something that I guess is a little bit sidebar-y, but I think it works well when it's up to the to partaking in the experiences that you want because you want them. I think people go overboard when they want to take in, like you said, fear of missing out. Other people are having more fun than me, so I'm internalizing their desires and treating them as if they were my own. And you find yourself doing a lot of things that maybe you don't really want to do, but everyone else is doing it, and I should, and I don't want to be the lame person. Peer pressure or whatever, that kind of internalizing other people's expectations also happens a lot with attraction, self-image, beauty, but also with what we want from life. And I think that's where people go overboard, is when they aren't sure what they want, so they're just sort of looking around at what other people want and then doing that.
So what's different about that experience when we talk about the future? When we talk about selves that are not yet us, right? Seems to me that there is a distinction between the sense I have about telling my past self to do something that benefits me, and the sense I have of being told by a future self to whom I am the past self to do something for him. In some sense, I get to, in the first scenario where I'm telling my past self something, I get to externalize my problem, right? I get to take my body consciousness and externalize it onto my younger self and say, you should have worked out more and eaten better, right? Whereas when I'm in the position of being externalized on by this future self, I am awfully resistant to the idea of being the one who should be put upon to make those decisions. Whether it is giving up my money for some future self, whether it is making healthier decisions, I don't want to because it's me who has to suffer for it. So why am I so divorced from past me and future me? Why don't I see them as being the same me? And is that the difference between people who do and don't make decisions based on future versions of themselves? People who save well for retirement and work out a lot now in order to avoid those problems in the future.
I think it's easier when looking at past me to judge how much better things could have been. These are all material differences. I have the benefit of hindsight. I think it's harder when judging past me, because our internal states are kind of hard to remember unless they are really extreme, to remember just how much I really wanted to screw around back then and how important that really was to me. And it's easier to dismiss it when I compare it to my hindsight benefit calculation of how much better my material circumstances could have been had I not screwed around so much. But let's face it, I really wanted to screw around. Really. A lot.
Well, also, I think part of what goes into it is the uncertainty of the future. I mean, we've talked about this a little bit, but are we sure the if we get contacted by a future self, by the act of them contacting us, they have potentially changed that future? You know, they what we aren't sure is actually going to happen.
When I am actually talking past me with that risk-reward, that the whole calculation of, like, you know, how much I wanted to screw around versus how much different things would have been, I also removed the risk that I didn't know back then, because I'm using hindsight. I know things could have been better. I know how things ended up with certainty. Back then, I didn't. I'd be screwing around, or I'd be refraining from screw around for a chance at a better life, as opposed to the certainty that I see now.
Well, and to sort of project that back into future self in River's scenario, in some sense, the me in the future wants this to be changed. This isn't a matter of whether he might or might not be a different me. He wants to be a different me. He wants to be the me who had these other advantages. And that's also a form of risk-reward calculation, because he doesn't know that those advantages actually get him what he wants. That's just his perspective on how to get to a place where he's happy with them. Perhaps it turns out I study hard, get into a good college, and then get shot because I was on the wrong campus at the wrong time during the wrong police action. He doesn't know that because he's never been that person. He's been the person who didn't have that experience.
With the exception of maybe total consciousness dump or complete foreknowledge of the future, it'll always seem uncertain and combative to us, I think.
Well, not to take this too far into the metaphor, but based on past performance, my ability to determine what would have made my life a better experience has not been great. So, how can I trust the future me to be any better at it than I was in the past?
Well, he does have the hindsight, and he has more certainty of the risk.
Yeah, that's fair.
Hindsight is a powerful, powerful weapon.
Well, yeah, but, you know, past me was a little shit, and future me might just be an even bigger shit, so...
I don't know, I think I've gotten less and less stubborn as the time goes on. I think I'd be more and more likely to listen... I'd be more likely to listen to a message from my future self than I would be able to convince my past self of anything.
I definitely do feel that the do-we-owe-ourselves-anything risk-reward does lie somewhere in the middle. I feel like some future planning is not necessarily a bad thing, but I don't feel that we should necessarily use that as an excuse to miss out on opportunities that may indeed be once in a lifetime.
Opportunities just for experience, to cash out some of our future opportunity and spend it now.
Absolutely. I've been very lucky in that I've been given a lot of opportunities. A lot of people I know haven't. And I am grateful for that. And if I could go back in time, there are a lot of mistakes I made. I don't know that I would change any of it, because I don't know that I would necessarily come out better for it. And not necessarily just economically or morally or philosophically. I would honestly rather keep myself then turn into someone different.
And perhaps that leads us into a model that could actually give us some insight on this. Maybe we need to see this as an economy of opportunities, right? That there is a cost of opportunities, past, present, and future, and that the decision has to be made on the basis of the understanding of an exchange of one kind of opportunity for another. That if I choose to expend my opportunity to go to a better college on my opportunity to go to Vegas for this weekend, then perhaps I can weigh the value of those two experiences directly against one another in an economic kind of way, in a base calculable units kind of way.
I think that is a good way to talk about it, because it is very complex, involves a lot of value decisions, risk, reward, all things that are available in economics. So I think that is a good language to discuss it from. And you know what? If I could go back to the beginning of this entire podcast, that's how I'd be talking about it from the start.
So I'm certain all of you remember that weekend you had in Vegas when you were about 20. We recall that pretty clearly. Now I want you to imagine for a moment somebody came to you and said, would you rather have a good college education or a weekend in Vegas, think back on that weekend and realize you've already made your decision. Past Professor Metal, silence. I can't believe that worked. Sean, I grant unto you the last word.
Well, thank you, Professor. All right, kids, join me as we go on our journey. Grab the nearest prosthetic arm and your Nietzsche mustache, and let's get into this thing.
So, I have refrained thus far from getting into Nietzsche territory, and, well, I'm not going to be able to do it anymore, so today's episode gets a Nietzsche corner for the last word. In Nietzsche's work, there is a very famous thought experiment called the eternal recurrence. And basically, the concept of the eternal recurrence is that all of time is a flat disk, that your little segment of it, off on some far-flung edge of the disk of time, passes, but eventually the whole thing comes back around. Nietzsche illustrates this by way of a demon who sits in your room one night and tells you that everything you've gone through thus far in your life will be repeated immediately, that you will essentially cease to have new experiences here and will go back to the beginning of your life to experience it again in exactly the same way. Nietzsche's question, though, about this is not whether or not this is a good thing, could this happen? It's how do you feel about it? Are you immediately overjoyed that you get to live your life again? That you get to go through doing all of these things and being all of these things? Or are you very upset about all the hardships you'll now have to endure again? That you got past all of these terrible things and now you have to start all over again? Nietzsche's point in asking a question like this is to ask us to look at our lives and to analyze how we feel about them. Not to figure out which things we did or didn't like, which things we do or don't approve of, but to ask us to evaluate the way that we live our lives. If we live a life in such a way that we would feel terrible about having to go back to the beginning and do it all over again, what does that say about the way we've lived that life? And how should we try to live a life? Should we live a life that is entirely full of joy, one that makes us happy up to the moment of our death, or should we endure hardships to be something else, something more? What Nietzsche's getting to, though, and this is where it gets a little bit confusing because there are two major schools of thought. One is that Nietzsche was a determinist, and that he thought that, essentially, this was something that could happen in the universe. He didn't have a good reason, a scientific basis, or an observation from which to derive the idea that this did happen, but he did have the idea that it was a possible way the world might work, that everything might rotate back around and you might have to start again. And if that were the case, wouldn't you want to think about it in advance and have a life that would be joyous and well-lived from that point on? The second possibility, and the one that is probably the most popular, is that this is just a thought experiment to ask you to consider what has gone on in your life and how you choose to live it. To think about these things in such a way that we might conceive of a recurrence of time. There is a third alternative to which I personally subscribe that is sort of a merging of the two ideas. And that is that this is not a fact of the universe, nor is it a thought experiment, but instead an existential imperative, something that should give us a way to live our lives, that we must live as if it were true that this would be the case. And this is not solely for our own happiness. As we know, Nietzsche was very interested in how hardships formed us into better and stronger people. But you should be celebrating your hardships to come to a point of what he called amor fati, or the love of fate, the love of my fate. Even if it means that I will have to experience terrible things over again in my life, even if I will have to overcome immense challenges, even if it will be painful and hard to get back through all of these things that have gone on in my life, I should love the life that I have. I should celebrate the hardships that have come before me, and I should face the universe with joy in my heart at the concept of getting to live like this again, to experience all of these things, to go through this pain, to come out the other side of it, and to be made better by it over and over again. For Nietzsche, coming to a point of celebration of even the hardest things in our lives makes us the kind of people that deserve to go forward in the future. That point of acknowledging, accepting, and embracing our fates makes us the kind of people who can make decisions going forward that are not based merely on our own pleasure-pain matrix or someone else's rule-based matrix, but instead allows us to seize on those parts of the world that we think are important and embrace them no matter how painful they are. What Nietzsche wanted us to understand in all of this is that by embracing these things, by becoming someone who can accept the pain and hardship of their life and still face the world with joy in our hearts, we put ourselves in the position of being able to overcome all that comes before us in the future also. And so we ask ourselves, why do I do these things? Why do I live this way? And if the answer is just to avoid pain or gain pleasure, then have we really done anything worthwhile? But if the answer is because it made me better, because it made me stronger, because it made it possible for me to go forward and to do more and be more and leave a lasting impact on the world, then that is a life well lived in Nietzsche's version of things. If I lived for my own sake, if I lived by my own rules, and I went out in the world and made something, then I have done well. The question of the actuality of the eternal recurrence is a bit more tenuous. It seems that the universe does not work that way. But if we consider the concept of multiple universes, if we consider the concept of a universe that possibly crunches back in at the end of its life cycle, if we consider the possibility that in the heat death of the universe there might be a quantum tunneling effect that causes a new Big Bang to start everything over again, and the infinite possibilities of multiverses and many universes forming and collapsing in the same way, then is it so unrealistic to imagine that somewhere in the cosmos, over and over again, after millions and millions of cycles, there might be another world in which a creature so much like me, so as to be distinct in very few ways, might exist? Then it becomes something worth considering. That maybe, by pondering this very thought experiment, I am determining the way that I think that creature, that person, should also try and live their life. And that's a pretty expansive concept. I think in a lot of ways, Nietzsche was telling us not what to believe about the universe, but how to approach what we believe about the universe.
Well, that's all the time we have for today. Don't forget to subscribe and review on iTunes, follow us on Twitter, send us your questions, and if you like what we're doing here, support us on Patreon. Join us next time after I punish Bruce for what he will have has done. I've been your host, Professor Metal.
I was will be Sean.
I was will be River.
I'm Bruce, and you'll never catch me! I'll hide behind this door!
Steve's, after him! That's the room the machine will be in!
Security, slavery, it's better than the dark.